to The Book Chooks, where we talk about books with your host, Librarian Selena.
I love reading books, it's fun. I often read them with my mum. I like reading to explore. There's no better way, I'm sure. I love reading.
Right here on Planet 104.6 FM. Stay tuned for the next half hour as we find more great books to read. Good evening, readers and listeners. I'm so pleased to bring another librarian to Book Chooks. Her name is Karen Craig, and she's here to talk about what else? Books. And also, last week it was the Auckland Writers Festival, and Karen, she went along to a few of those to hear the authors speak about their books. So she's going to share with us what she found. So Karen works at the Auckland Central City Library, where she's in the collections department. So welcome, Karen.
Thank you, Selena.
So, hey, you've got a big stack of books there, and it looks like one of my favourite genres, which is biography. So what's that you've got there?
I brought along a few books from one of the surprises for me from the festival, because one of the reasons why I like going to writers' festivals is not just the chance to see in person your favorite author, but to discover a new author. Mm-hmm. So I had heard in the world, when you read book reviews in the literary world, you come across this name, A.N. Wilson, who was always making very waspish and witty remarks about other people's writing, but I had never read his writing myself. And he was at the festival. He appeared in three events, and he was just a remarkable man with an incredible amount of knowledge, of fantastic sense of humor, quite original. And he was there to speak about his new novel. He writes historical novels and biographies of historical figures, and he's extremely prolific. He's written something like 70 books.
Wow.
Yeah, and the latest one was very topical for us here in New Zealand. It's a novel, historical novel called Resolution, and it takes place on Captain Cook's second voyage to the Pacific,
yeah,
on the ship HMS Resolution. And it's about the young boy who was taken along by his father, who was the naturalist on the voyage, and turned out to be somewhat of a prodigy on painting pictures of the animals, the flora and the fauna they were encountering in their various stops. And it traces his life during the trip with Captain Cook and then what happened to him afterwards. So when I walked into the room where A.N. Wilson was to present,
yeah,
this book, up on the wall was a big slide, a big gigantic screen with a slide that said, George Forster, librarian, circumnavigator of the world, and revolutionary.
Ah.
So being a librarian, then immediately I said, I'm in the right place. In later life, he was in fact a librarian at the University of Mainz.
Oh.
But A.N. Wilson did allow himself a few lines about how, a few jokes about librarians and revolutionaries being sort of contradictory terms,
what?
Which I, yeah, thank you, Selena, totally disagree with, but was not in a position to raise my hand and
okay,
correct him on that. Maybe I'll write a letter to the Times,
right,
about it.
Yeah.
So his revolutionary part was when he later got involved in the French Revolution.
Oh, I see.
And actually had a good friend named Adam Lux, who had written a poem. One of the better lines in the presentation was about his friend Adam Lux, who wrote a poem about Marat, the revolutionary who was killed in his bath by Charlotte Corday. And A.N. Wilson said, we don't really know what was in his head to have done something so stupid as to have written a poem about the great revolutionary in the terror, during the terror. He said, uh-huh, we don't really know what was in his head because his head was chopped off. That's the sort of man he is. He's got a dry wit. Yeah.
Funny.
So this Resolution book, which I have not been able to get my hands on yet because it is so popular,
right,
but I'm on the waiting list,
yes,
is absolutely, the things that he talked about life on the ship and how poor George Forster had been, you know, the diet of the men on the ship was roast penguin and cauliflower, not cauliflower, cabbage. What's the thing you make? Oh, sauerkraut.
Sorry,
I'm not an expert. I'm an expert on sauerkraut. I don't actually like sauerkraut. But that was what Cook made all the men on the ship eat to avoid scurvy. He was the first, or one of the first in the British Navy to recognize that it was the lack of vegetables, fruit and vegetables, yes, and vitamin C that would cause scurvy. And George did not like to eat up what was on his plate when what was on his plate was roast penguin and scurvy.
Oh, roast penguin.
And so he refused and actually came down with scurvy, lost all of his teeth. It's a fascinating story.
And how old was he when he was on the ship?
He was, he was 20 when they returned to England. So yeah, he would have been about 17. He was in his teens when they left. He's definitely the youngest. He was known for the rest of his life as the boy on Cook's second expedition.
Okay. Yeah. Sounds like a fascinating book.
It does.
I'm going to have to put that on my request list, too.
Yeah. He certainly covers, he's one of those people who can, in some way, allow the author to write a microcosm of the entire cultural world and life at the time that he was living, because of the fact that he was interested in so many different things and went to so many different places and got involved in so different the Enlightenment movement and so on. Yeah. And he did write a book himself. So George was an author. In fact, Captain Cook was quite upset because as not everybody knows, I myself didn't know until recently, Captain Cook was not from a rich family. He was from a working class family. And one of the ways that he had to make some money for his old age was to write books about his expeditions. So when the crew joined up, they were all sort of a modern version of the confidentiality agreement. They were told that they were not allowed to write up the voyage when they came back because this had happened in the past. Somebody had, usurped the opportunity and told all and not left it for Captain Cook. But George Forster also ignored this warning that had been put out to all the crew. And he wrote a book called A Voyage Around the World, which was a huge, what you might call, bestseller of the time.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So something to read once you read Resolution.
Oh, would that be in the library?
I'm sure it would. I'm going to put my hand on it. I haven't looked up in the catalog, but I'll put my hand in the fire that we would have a copy.
Oh, I hope so. Because the Auckland City Library has some really old books.
Yes, we do. So my favorite place, of course, working at Central Library, in the Central Library basement, where I went down to find some of the older A.N. Wilson biographies to have a look and a read. It's jammed full of the books that we feel, although they're not going out all the time, are still going, a small but dedicated readership is still interested in these books and they're still worthy of being preserved.
Yeah. Well, talking about that, the book I bought today is very old. It's called The Holy War by John Bunyan, and it was published back in 1628. Although this one isn't actually that old. It's a reprint of back in 1948. But still, it's very old, and it still has, the library pocket and the date jury slip. With dates back to 87 and the old book smell.
If we had that book, we probably do. We very possibly have our Pilgrim's Progress. It would be in the special collections and not lendable.
Yeah.
But because we usually over 80 years, we don't let people, they come for reading in the library and looking at by scholars.
White gloves.
Actually, yes, you do. For some books, white gloves is recommended. For others, it's thought that, if the pages are very fragile, could also be contraindicated according to the book. But we do definitely have the gray pillows that the books sit on. And for instance, when we pull out our famous first folio of Shakespeare, it is always pulled out with the white gloves. So, the pop-up theater that was here doing the Shakespeare, that we had one of the directors came in to consult our first folio and everybody brought out the white gloves and the gray pillows. It was fascinating.
You probably don't want to sneeze while you're looking at the first
possibly
folio.
Not, but we don't request people to wear surgical masks.
I remember watching a Mr. Bean when he went to the library and he got this really old copy of, I think it's old, those calligraphy.
The illuminated the manuscripts. Yeah, hand painted.
And
yeah,
he spilled ink over it. Made a mess.
How to give a librarian a heart attack.
Don't be Mr. Bean.
No.
Anyway, so the Holy Wall, only about halfway through, but as you said, he wrote The Pilgrim's Progress, which is a classic Christian novel, or what do you call it, allegory?
Yes, yeah.
And so he wrote other books as well, and so, yeah, I'm reading The Holy War, which is really good.
If you notice in all the children's novels that your parents would have read, children's books, sorry, not novels, that your parents would have read from the turn of the century that they wanted you to read, those books like Little Women that people love passing on to their children, the characters are very often reading John Bunyan. They've been studying the Pilgrim's Progress.
Yeah. Okay. So going back to A.N. Wilson, you have a little taster of what his writing is like for those who haven't.
Yes. So I brought along four. So he wrote, one of the books he's most famous for is his book, The Victorians. And he explained at the festival that was actually, it was reading Lytton Strachey's book on the Victorians that inspired him to become a writer about historical periods. Because once he finished that book, he said, this is what I want to do. This is my mission in life. And he wrote a famous biography of Queen Victoria. And he also wrote a book on the Victorian age, mm-hmm. The Victorians, which is a wonderful book, which explains, as he said at the festival, why are the Victorians so fascinating for us? Because they are the farthest away of peoples who are still close to us. So they were the beginning of the modern age. Mm-hmm. And he talks a lot about how many repeals were done during the Victorian age. We tend to think of the Victorian age as a very conservative era, whereas actually there was a lot of repealing of past things going on. And he has a very good passage I just brought from the Queen Victoria, from his novel Queen Victoria. So they asked him at the festival, what was Queen Victoria's greatest achievement? And he said, lasting so long, as is also true of our present monarch.
Yes.
That was quite funny. So this is a story about Queen Victoria after Albert has died. So the prince consort has died. She's a widow. And she decides to go back to visit, you know, they had a palace on the Isle of Wight, and they had together visited Parkhurst Prison it was a prison for women. And she decided to go back 19 years later and revisit the prison. There were 354 female convicts. Mm-hmm. They said the saddest cases, and as far as character goes, not the worst. This is quoting from her. For they are poor young girls who from shame and desertion have destroyed their newly born children. So here's what A.N. Wilson writes. She went through many parts of the prison, but was only allowed near the prisoners who were well behaved. The governor told her that there was one wing which she should not visit, that in which the Irish were locked up.
Uh-huh.
The visit during the previous week of a Roman Catholic priest had left them unmanageable and excited. That's in quote marks. Although naturally the governor knew the identity of his visitor, it was in no sense an official visit, and the prisoners were not told the queen was coming. Then, in the laundry, one of the women recognized her. And here's a quote from Queen Victoria's journals. In an instant, many threw themselves on their knees, crying and sobbing, calling on me to pardon them. It was a most painful scene, and I hurried up the flight of stairs in the long ward to where the nursery was. End quote. This was surely one of the strangest incidents in Victoria's early widowhood. It is also historically revealing insofar as these women had not at all instantly recognized the Queen. Before the days of newspaper photography, let alone films, newsreels, or television, public figures were not necessarily recognizable to the population at large. How many men and women in 1864 could have recognized Gladstone or the Prince of Wales? Far fewer, proportionately, than would be the case today with comparable figures. It was partly for this reason that the politicians were so anxious, as Victoria developed habits of private grief and hidden introspection, that she should be encouraged to be on parade, as she had been when she was Sir John Conroy's puppet as a teenager, and as, rather more willingly, she had allowed herself to be in the lifetime of the angel.
Wow.
So it's that combination of a broader view of history, of pointing out to us the differences. He actually has a really good line at the start of his book on the Victorians about how people think that this book is going to be about a criticism, or that writing about the Victorians is us criticizing them, whereas he often feels that it's the Victorians looking at us and criticizing us. So this double-edged sword.
Funny.
Yeah, it's very, very good.
All right, Karen, let's take a break now. We're going to listen to all about the books and we'll be right back.
Because you know I'm all about those books, start reading. I'm all about those books, start reading. I'm all about those books, start reading. I'm all about those books. Yeah, it's pretty clear that I'm really cool. Because I'm reading, reading, it's what I like to do. Cause I got that fiction that everyone's chasing. All of these books take you so many places. I see those magazines, they making reading hot. They're great when time is short and you can even swap. If you got books or Kindles, just raise them up. Cause anything you read is perfect from the start until the stop. Yeah, Devon said she told me don't worry. Goodreads like lots of books to read tonight. You know I won't be no closed-minded, blank-looking Barbie doll. So if that's what you're into, then go ahead and move along. Because you know I'm all about those books, start reading. I'm all about those books, start reading. I'm all about those books, start reading. I'm all about those books, hey. I'm bringing reading back. Go ahead and check out a gigantic stack.
No, I'm not joking.
I know you think it's smack, but I'm here to tell you every book is an adventure. Makes you never want to stop. Yeah, Devon said she told me don't. You know I'm all about those books, start reading. I'm all about those books, start reading. I'm all about those books, start reading. I'm all about those books, because you know I'm all about those books, start reading. I'm all about those books, start reading. I'm all about those books, start reading. Books.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Book Chooks on Planet 104.6 FM in Auckland, New Zealand. If you missed the first half of our show, you can download and listen to us online at planetaudio.org.nz/bookchooks. Also, check out our Goodreads group. The link is on the website where you'll find the list of what we're reading on the bookshelf. Well, it's going to be a long list of books here. You've got another one there who also was at the Auckland Writers Festival, and she's Fiona Kidman, and the book is called All Day at the Movies. Can you tell us a bit more about that, or Fiona Kidman, what was she doing at the festival?
Yes, happily. So Fiona Kidman was named the Honored New Zealand Writer for this festival, and every year the Honored New Zealand Writer presents, does a talk, a sort of, don't want to use the word lecture, a talk. So it's sort of looking back over a career and deciding. So Fiona Kidman, who has one of the longest careers, so she was, how many years did she say? 50, she's been writing for 50 or 60 years already.
Oh, wow.
Has a long list of books. And this one in particular, All Day at the Movies, I'm happy to say that Auckland Libraries nominated for the Dublin Impact Literary Award this year. So the Dublin Impact Literary Award is actually the richest literary award in the world, and it's done through the Dublin City Library.
Oh,
and libraries all around the world are asked to nominate three books, and they go into the long list. And libraries in New Zealand, I know Wellington and Christchurch, and I believe, I'm quite sure also Dunedin and Auckland all nominate books.
I didn't know that.
And we nominated All Day at the Movies. All Day at the Movies is it was a fascinating read for me. I read it in 2 days. It really carries you along, but it's a, what you might call that old line in the movies, fasten your seatbelts is going to be a bumpy ride, the Betty Davis, I believe it was Betty Davis line.
Yes.
That it definitely does. It takes you through, begins at the very end of World War II with a woman with a small child whose husband has been killed in the last days of World War II and is going off to work in the tobacco farms. She used to work as a librarian, and so did Fiona Kidman. She was a librarian in Wellington, but she lost her job. She had the child. She's going off to the tobacco farms. And it then traces from that time, from her departure to up to the present times, through three generations that come down from this one daughter that she has, and she heads out to the tobacco fields. And it goes through basically every social more upheaval or practice that's been in that recent history of New Zealand. Yeah. That you might think, you know, it's a pretty peaceful country, things change, it's not been coming that rapidly, but when you go through a book, and it's in, what, 300 pages?
Yeah.
308 pages. It's like being on a tempest-tossed sea, I'll tell you.
Oh,
so
my.
It covers things like, you know, the practice of adopting out children of unwed mothers, domestic abuse, sexual abuse, unemployment, the war fees, the Springbok tour.
Oh, all the things that happened in New Zealand.
All the things that happened. Exactly.
Yeah.
And beautifully written. And I must say, Fiona Kidman, I can't remember where I read this, but it might have even been said at the festival about when people write at a certain age, they have at their hands a skill of writing that goes along with the ideas that they have, and also a sort of a sharper sense of loss, because if you've lived a long life, I can tell you, mine isn't as long as Fiona Kidman's, but you have had more encounters with loss,
yes.
And it gives it a different temperament to sort of your writing. At times quite wistful, at times staunch, and it makes for a very exciting combination.
Yeah.
It really keeps the writing going, and I selected just one paragraph that I thought was particularly revealing. And so this is written about Linda, one of the characters, who has just come out of a love story.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, unhappily, and it says, "Not long after her night with Ed Carter, she will meet a man who will cherish her always. Not a genius, just a man who is consistent and solid in his ways. When Linda is in her 60s and then her 70s and she has grandchildren, she will think back to the frivolities of her own early life. That day will return now and then like a comic book ghost, pale, shapeless, and mean, a day when she looked evil in the face and did not recognize it. People talk about moments that change their lives, not always seeing that there are many moments that add up to the time when they are ready for change. But Linda will think, there is something that defines the moment, something to hold on to and remind yourself that change is possible. She will stop giving out advice, or not in any official sense. Linda is a good listener, her friends will say."
Mm. Well, that's another one to put on my list.
Absolutely.
To read. And talking about all these great books to read,
on a lighter touch.
On a lighter touch. I borrowed this book from the library called Party Games for Adults. It's by Lillian and Godfrey Frankel, with drawings by Doug Anderson. And you can see a lot of people on the cover having fun.
Yes, I have.
And it says, "Icebreakers, parlor games, and party tips that will make your guests flip."
We should have played one of those, Selena. Oh. We should have started off with an icebreaker.
Sorry. On page 92, there's a funny illustration there. It's got book race. So I will just share with you what you do for a book race. Okay. There is only one way books can meet competition from television. The book must be made indispensable. Therefore, we offer this game, which can be played much more easily with a book than with a television set. Give a book, each about the same size, to each guest. Have the players face a line on the other side of the room or about 20 feet ahead. let them balance the books on their heads. Then, at a starting signal, the players race towards the distant line, reach it, turn around, and race back. Hands may be used only after a book slides off a player's skull and hits the ground. Before that player again moves forward, he must pick up the book and balance it on his head or her head, then drop his hands to his sides. The winner is the player who makes the round trip fastest. In larger groups, it's a good idea to play the game as a relay, with one book being given to each team. When a player returns to the starting line in the relay, he hands the book to the next racer and so on, repeating the operation until one team wins. For a super duper race, use dictionaries or encyclopedias.
Possibly not all volumes at the same time. Possibly he means one volume.
Just one. Yes, I don't know. Can you balance a book on your head?
Oh, yeah. That's the way children were always taught to walk upright, you know, to walk straightly, to have good posture. It was with the book on the head.
I think I'll have to try it next time I'm teaching a class. And
possibly encourage people to use their own books and not library books, which have to be read by many other people.
Oh.
I'm not sure.
Well, we could try it, but just not at the moment, but later.
We have there's a thing that a lot of libraries organize of speed dating through books. Do you know about this? Where you?
No.
I haven't ever done it myself, but it's about you get together a lot of people and you have 5 minutes to talk to them. And I think it's related to what book you're holding in your hand.
Oh, right.
Is that it? You hold a book in your hand. Yeah. So not in your head, in your hand, but it could be on your head.
Not speed reading, speed dating.
Yeah, speed reading and dating together.
Oh, maybe I should try it on this show.
Yeah.
Get some, like, two people of opposite sex and get them to do a demonstration.
Well, you'd have to be, you actually have to have probably a larger room, because I think part of the buzz is the fact that you have a large crowd.
Oh, so how long do you have to take to talk about the book, though?
I suppose 5 minutes.
Oh, that's not long enough.
Yeah. Well, that's the whole point of why it's called speed.
Oh, well, if you have a lot of people and you're going around.
Yeah.
So you're going to organize that, Karen?
Oh, possibly.
Giving you ideas now. what else have we got here? Just relating to The Resolution, which was Ian Wilson's book, and how you said the boy was a
illustrator
of plants, because he was, when they went on the voyages, they went and looked at the new plants that they couldn't grow in England or they'd never seen before.
Yeah, it's definitely voyages of exploration and discovery,
Yeah. And so that made me think, wow, why did they go on these voyages? Was it not just to colonize new lands, but to maybe, you know, find new plants for their garden?
It was the era of scientific, particularly fertile area of era of scientific discovery and scientific investigation, scientific curiosity. And A.M. Wilson stressed that a lot, that Captain Cook was not primarily, he was not setting out on expeditions to colonize.
Yeah.
He was setting out expeditions for hunger for knowledge and find out more things about the world. They were looking for, in this particular case, they were looking for the great southern continent, Australia.
They were just hungry to know more about the world.
Yeah,
and I think that's what librarians are. They're hungry to know a bit more.
And they want to encourage people to be hungry to know a lot more.
Yeah.
I think that's the main thing.
Yeah, just thinking about the botany side, I've got this book called The Native Garden, Design Themes from Wild New Zealand, and it's a lovely book of plants and how to grow the natives in your garden, and also this one, 100 Best New Zealand Native Plants for Gardens by Fiona Edie, which is a really good reference for me at the moment. Yeah, so I'm doing a bit of scientific discovery myself.
Yes, I'm really love the native plants, you know, the lots of books we have at the library about New Zealand natives, because it is such a wonderful thing to be able to bring back into our cities some of these New Zealand natives that are sitting out in nurseries in the outskirts of Auckland. I did that when we replanted our garden, and it was fascinating. We went to Oratia, where they have the nurseries.
Yeah.
It was lovely.
Yeah. So
the book helps you kind of have an idea of the kind of things you think would be good for your garden.
Yeah, that's great. Oh, sorry, Karen, that's all we have time for. You'll have to come back again another time.
My pleasure.
But happy reading, everyone. And we'll be back, well, hopefully next week.
I'm sure. Thank you, Selena.